You get blue eyes. Welcome to the April 22nd, 2015 session of the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. We've got four measures up today, and they're all House measures, and I think they all came out of the House on like a 60-0 vote.
That's not true.
That's not true? We missed one?
2480.
2480. Well, we'll see what happens with that. So we're going to open and start with a public hearing on House Bill 2969. James?
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2969 allows on-premise consumption of food and non-alcoholic beverages in certified smoke shops as long as food and beverages are not sold or offered by the smoke shop. Declares emergency effective on passage. There is no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact. There are no amendments.
Representative, welcome to the committee.
Microphones make me nervous.
Get used to it.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thank you. And by the way, it was a 58-1 vote in the House. I'm going to throw Representative Widener under the bus now. He was a no vote because he said he needed a no vote that day.
That's a good reason.
Okay, so it really was unanimous.
I've done that a couple of times.
Is he related to you, Thompson?
He sits right behind me, and I tried everything to swayed him. But anyway, I'm here to rectify what really is an unintended consequence. Some of you were probably here back in 2007. The Indoor Clean Air Act was passed. There was a lot of discussion at that time about what we do with cigar shops and cigar bars. Later in the, I believe it was the 2011 session, there were a couple of different bills that were passed around that dealt with the issue of cigar shops, specifically the ones that met the criteria that would be grandfathered in as what would become exempted smoke shops. There were about eight of them at the time that would be grandfathered in under this, and I believe there's now about three left that survived that time period. In the negotiations over this exemption, the idea of food and beverage came up. One of the lines from then House Bill 2726 had this in it. It said prohibits food or beverage on site. At the time, because of some good friends in the business, I emailed my concern to Representative Mike Schaffler at that time, and I said, look, I'm concerned, and I'll read my email. I said, this bill also prohibits the consumption of any food or beverage, including water, anywhere in the business. And as I said to him, that would mean employees would not be able to eat their lunch at work or have a cup of coffee or a drink of water while at work. And I think this could be seen as anti-labor and anti-business all at the same time and a violation of employees' personal liberties. He wrote me back that we'll take care of it. And I think through the craziness, as you know, of a session, it just never really got worked out. And eventually it was built into the statute language. Now, I didn't really think much of it until about a year ago or so, maybe 2 years ago, that my son began working at Ava Cigars and Wine here in Salem. And he called me up on his first day of work, and he said, Dad, I can't eat at work. And I said, I don't understand that. And he said, remember the no food or drink period? Oh, so where do you eat? Well, we have to go outside and around the corner and sit in some tables out there. So, okay. If I ever get here, I'll do something about that. And that's my promise I made to my son and to my friend that owns the business. So it's not only employees, but actually customers. So a customer walks into the cigar shop, which has already been exempted. So what I want to point out that really clearly here, and it's on the OLIS information too, this is not a smoking issue. This is not about smoking or not smoking. The smoking's already going on. That's been approved by the legislature. It's now in statute. It's a matter of, in good intentions, we put something in that shouldn't be there, which is no food or drink on the premises. What I did was, and again, in OLIS, you can see the actual OAR 333-015-0068B5, anyway, which is the alternative smoke shop certification requirements for businesses existing on December 31st, 2008. And there it is number 12345, not sell, offer, or allow on-premise consumption of food or beverages, including alcoholic beverages. So what House Bill 2969 basically says is we're just going to take that line out about no food or beverage on the premise. None of the people involved in any of the smoke shops want to sell. None of them want to provide, give away, They don't want anything like that. They just want to be able to allow food and drink on a premises, including customers who walk in with a cup of coffee or a bottle of water. And at this point, what he has to do is they have signs that are a specific height and a specific font that say, no food or drink. So he's losing customers, or at least temporarily loses a customer, because they walk in, they've got a cup of Starbucks or whatever in their hand, and he has to say at the door, I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm sorry, sir, you can't bring that in here. And that seems a little over the top. One of the things that I want to also point out is that I was very excited about this when we, when I testified on this over in the House. This letter came the day I testified. It's from the Oregon Health Authority, from Karen Girard, who is the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention Section Manager for the Oregon Health Authority. And she points out this statute and this exemption. And she wrote this at the towards the back of the letter. She said, as currently written, the Public Health Division does not have any concerns with HB 2969 and can easily incorporate these changes into our procedures. So that was very helpful, and I appreciate that she did that. That was one of the big battles we fought with OHA on how to make sure we were doing this right. So that's kind of it. It's just, again, I'm asking for a fair playing field for employees, customers, the business of these exempted cigar shops. The question came up in some people actually over on my side of, well, what about all these smoke shops that are appearing all up and down the streets, which are mostly the vaping stores, I believe. They would not be a part of this because of the statutory language that limits it to these exempted cigar shops. So it's not open for an interpretation of what is a smoke shop. It's already been established what's a smoke shop. So that was it. If you had any questions, I'd love to answer them.
Questions sure. of the representative. Senator Monroe.
Would this have any impact on medical marijuana dispensaries or, in the future, marijuana dispensaries?
Yeah, Chair Beyer and Senator Monroe, the answer is no, because, again, based on these, which you'll find in your OLIS, this OAR blah, 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 talks about just these specific exempted cigar shops. And okay. This actually was to go back a little bit in history, this was a hookah lounge bill, I think, is what it was. It was to stop the sort of the proliferation of kids going to these hookah lounges. And that's how we ended up with this.
Yeah.
Senator?
Yes. This is the good representative's first time before our committee, so I just want to make something very clear. This is the Senate. We like things short and concise. The House likes to talk a lot. We don't really care for that over on this side. You can actually talk yourself out of a bill.
Are you done, Senator Thompson?
I was going to say, I was a yes for the first 7 minutes, and then I'm probably going to switch to a no.
I know.
Anybody else want to get into the game?
It was 2 minutes and 13 seconds.
Representative Post, I would note that these are your two Republican colleagues.
I know.
All right. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
That's all I have signed up to testify on House Bill 2969. Does anybody else care to take a shot?
Or
seeing none, we will close the public hearing on 2969. We'll open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2969 to the Senate floor as proposed. Discussion. Any opposition? It's done. House Bill 2969 goes to the House floor, and Senator Thompson has volunteered to carry that one.
Where did that come from?
Proposed on that. And you're here for the first one. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2184. And James?
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2184 directs Oregon Department of Transportation and Oregon Parks and Recreation Department to provide link from ODOT website to the parks website for the purpose of providing information about how to purchase day-use parking passes for state parks requiring pass. Directs Parks Department to work with ODOT and other state agencies to provide certain information regarding purchase of day-use parking passes at ODOT field offices where applications of driver license or vehicle registrations are accepted. There is no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact, and there are no amendments.
Welcome again. You've done pretty well in front of this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We have before you the bill as just now aptly described, and I'm based on what you said last time, I said Representative Girard. Any questions?
I say we pass it.
Go for it.
Just to be really clear, this would simply put a link on the page that would direct it to the Parks Department.
Yes, and some people ask why do we need to do that, and simply because there are so many requests of the DMV to add links and website information that this would just give them positive direction to
and
do
I believe
so.
This has been a, you bring this because it's been positively received in other states like Idaho?
Yes, it's been something that, it's sort of a cross-marketing tool. If you go into a, well, you guys wouldn't go into a dress shop, but just pretending for a minute that you would go into a dress shop, you might see at the counter some information about where you might buy shoes or get your clothes cleaned, things like that. This is just, there's a nexus between having a vehicle and touring around the state parks in our state. So it just seems like a good way.
Do you have questions?
I guess I did. So, like, if you want a snow park permit, you can go to most of the small little stores around and get these. Where do you get your day pass permits if you're going to go camping? Strictly at the campsites? Where in the past are you able to get those?
You can order them.
Do you want to answer that?
Senator Thompson, Chair Beyer, for the record, Don Phillips here on behalf of Representative Stark for House District 4, who could not make it today.
Any idea?
And so we have a representative from the Parks Department here, and this link that would be on the DMV website would direct you to the State Parks and Rec website, and it would give you information about all the different day passes that are there. I believe it would direct you about how to get a snow park permit, which I think is actually through ODOT and forestry. There's some different places you get a snow park, but for the day use park passes for our state parks, that's where you would get the information. It's through this ODOT link. It would take you directly to the state parks website.
Okay. Did you answer?
I say we move it.
Okay.
Yeah, I say we move.
Thank you. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you,
I should ask. There weren't any other questions, were there? There were not. Thank you. Amy, ODOT okay with this? Cool. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on House Bill 2184?
Decreases the chance.
When once, twice, three times. We'll close the public hearing and we'll open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2184 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Senator Monroe?
Yeah, Representative Stark talked to me about this bill yesterday, and he seemed to believe that there was a strong likelihood that this would actually raise revenue. Which is a good thing.
So you're saying we should vote against it?
Increasing then? Uses. Anybody else? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill 2184 is moved to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. And I assume Senator Thatcher would like to carry that. So we'll close on that. We're now down to, keep this thing going. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2279. James.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2279 applies definition of state government as defined in ORS 174.111 to clarify meaning of state regarding utility access to lands belonging to the state of Oregon. There is no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and there are no amendments.
Mr. Markey, you want to bring help up? I'm not sure that would help you, but.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Markey, representing the Port of Coos Bay today in support of House Bill 2279. This bill is a fairly technical clarification of the definition of state in reference to utility land access. The bill passed unanimously in the House with no opposition. As many of you know, the Port of Coos Bay recently purchased a rail line on the South Coast, and since doing so, they've hired a company to manage all of the utility crossings and land access points throughout the rail line and ran into one problem with one of the utility companies. As they were updating the contracts, the utility company said, actually, we don't believe you owe anything to you for any of these access points or utility crossings because we believe you are a state agency. And currently, if a state agency owns land, they are not allowed to charge the utility in those instances. They thought that the Port of Coos Bay was a state agency simply because the governor appointed their port commissioners. And so this bill is very simple in that it clarifies the definition of a state within the within that section to make sure that a port is not defined as a state agency. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wants to testify on House Bill 2279? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2279. Chair moves House Bill 2279 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to that motion? There is none. House Bill 2279 is passed to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. Who wants to carry? Senator Monroe wants to carry this one. So we are closed on that. So we will open on House Bill 2969. 2480. 2480. Did I miss? Oh, I'm sorry. I looked too far down the agenda. We're opening works at our public hearing on House Bill 2480.
Mr. Chair, yes. Committee members, House Bill 2480 directs Oregon Liquor Control Commission to charge application fee up to $150 for issuance of new license or license following ownership change. It specifies application fee applies only to licenses with annual fee. Directs OLCC to refund fee under specified circumstances. Directs OLCC to adopt rules setting fee by class of license. There is a revenue impact, there is a minimal fiscal impact, and there are no amendments.
Jesse.
Thank you, Chair Beyer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Sweet. I'm a policy analyst with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and I am offering testimony in support of the bill. This bill passed the House with 10 no votes, for the record. The bill, as James describes, creates a license application fee. The fees for annual licenses are set in statute and are among the lowest in the nation. These license fees are collected after the investigation is concluded and the license is ready to be issued. Currently, the OLCC processes approximately 3,500 new license applications on an annual basis, and we process these applications without charge. Over the past 5 years, the total number of new applications has risen 19% from approximately 2,800 in 2009 to more than 3,500 in 2014. Over this period of time, the agency has not hired any additional staff to process these applications. Because the OLCC does not charge an application fee, staff have found that some applicants are not committed to the process and are either slow to provide necessary information to complete the application or withdraw their application after significant staff resources have been expended. The current conditions allow applicants to apply without assuming any risk. Last year, over 6% or more than 200 applicants submitted applications which were never ultimately completed. This resulted in staff resources being diminished and increased time to issue licenses to all applicants. House Bill 2480 proposes to address this situation by requiring new applicants for an annual liquor license to pay a $150 application fee. I'd like to stress that this is for new applicants only. It does not apply to renewals. By requiring applicants to pay this fee, the applicant's perceived value of submitting an application increases, and the OLCC expects that fewer businesses will withdraw from the application process. And this will allow for licenses to be issued quickly across, more quickly across the system. And we believe that the cost to the applicant will be offset by the license being issued quicker and the applicant being able to get in business and make some money. The fee, as noted, is non-refundable, except that the commission shall refund the fee if the applicant submits a completed application and the commission does not act on that application on or before the passage of 75 days. The commission will adopt rules to establish fees and to define a completed application. I'd like to note also that we worked with Bill Perry on behalf of Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association on this concept, and he's supportive of the concept. There is a revenue impact for 2015-17 biennium. The fee is expected to impact between 3,500 and 4,500 applicants, with expected revenue between $325,000 and $650,000. The variability is due to the fact that the fees are not yet set in rule, and also due to the fact that we're not sure how many of these fees are going to be refunded. That concludes my testimony, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
So, Jesse, I'm kind of surprised, so I want to be clear if I understand this. Currently, OLCC doesn't charge to make an application, but if it's approved, then they're charged an annual fee. So the annual fee for those that are approved is what now?
Chair Beyer, the annual license fees are set in statute, and they vary by license type. It's between $100 and $500, I believe.
For a first-time restaurant or bar that was opening, if they paid the $150, would that be applied toward the first annual fee, or this is just a processing fee?
Chair Beyer, this is a freestanding processing fee. It would not be applied to the first year's license fee.
So the quid pro quo here, I see Bill sitting back there, quid pro quo is that you're not getting things processed timely now. What you get out of this is you get a little more money, so you have a little more people to do the processing quicker. And the other side of that one is if you don't process it within 75 days, they get their money back. Or I guess it's approved.
Yeah.
Outright, it's approved.
Yeah. Chair Beyer.
They're buying turnaround time.
Yeah, I think you've accurately described the quid pro quo. I'd like to make one clarifying point, and that the funds from this fee are not dedicated, so they'll just go into our general distribution formula.
Okay. Questions? Senator Thompson?
Thank you, Chair Beyer. So you won't hire any new people to do these applications? You have the same amount of people doing them?
Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, has any allocation of funds for new hires would go through the normal budget process, and we would need to request additional limitation. This $150 fee right now would just be going to the general fund, to our operations, to cities and counties, the same place that all other liquor revenue goes.
I guess the piece that goes on with that is if they drag their feet, the applications are approved without further review after 75 days, if I'm understanding.
No, that's what he said.
Is that not what it says?
I'm sorry.
Return the money.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chair.
It's refundable.
Yeah.
Okay.
If
okay.
we do not propose to either grant or deny the application within 75 days, the fee is refundable, but that's independent of the disposition of the application.
It wasn't quite the quid pro quo I thought it was. Yes.
What's the average time it takes you to do, like for $150, what's somebody getting? How long does it take somebody to do an application? Like half an hour? 15 minutes? 2 days?
That's probably the question. It depends.
Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, the time to complete an application is not really the limiting factor in our overall processing time for applications. The application itself for most licenses is fairly straightforward, and the applicants are able to gather the supporting documents in a timely fashion in most cases, and our staff work diligently to help them along with the process. The largest factor in the licensing time is that local governments have 45 days by law to opine on the application. We process applications on average right around 75 days from start to finish, including that 45 days for the local government input. So the idea here is that by requiring the application fee, we would start to get forms in more quickly. We would eliminate reduce that small amount of of the applicant pool that is not committed to the process, and we would be able to shave a couple days off of our overall licensing time.
That didn't answer my question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
How much staff time? I mean, because I was on the county commission, and we'd hold a meeting once a month, and sometimes an application comes in the day after we met, so we aren't going to meet again for another month. And so that's some of the time loss that you face, and you can't control that. Mm-hmm. But how much actual sit down, look at the application, check it out by an employee in your agency does it take to do this? I'm just trying to justify why you picked 150.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson. I don't have a number for you in terms of actual staff hours per application. I can research that and send it into the committee.
Then why'd you pick 150?
Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, the $150 fee, I think, was a fee that was reasonably estimated to, I would say, get the applicant's attention, but not be so burdensome that it would prevent interested parties from applying. And I would like to also note that this $150 is the maximum fee. The bill directs OLCC to adopt rules establishing fees by license type.
What?
Oh, he said as long as he gives me some information.
Okay. I had a thought and I forgot what it was. But I assume that some of this, Jesse, is the numbers that you can get back to Senator Girard on the time is going to vary greatly, because I assume some of this is the background check and all of that stuff, standard.
Thompson.
Excuse me. Thompson, not you.
Well, the background check, that's usually done by the sheriff department in your counties.
No, I think they do it direct.
Do that, too?
Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, I can speak to that. We do our own background checks in-house, and we're able to do that fairly quickly. The bulk of the time has to do with, in some cases, counseling the applicant in terms of what type of license they need. In other cases, making sure that we have all of the information. Probably 95%, and that's an anecdotal number, of our license applications are fairly straightforward and go very smoothly. But, you know, there's that small number that may have a complicated business structure, be proposing a novel idea. They take a little more staff time.
Do you have a lot of applications that might fall into the frivolous category, where they're put in, you do a bunch of work, and then they pull them out?
Chair Beyer, that's the 6% number that I gave you represents the number of applications which are submitted but never completed. Within that 6%, there are going to be some that are frivolous and some that are never completed for what you might call more mundane reasons. You know, sometimes leases fall through, plans change. So that 6% number will never be zero. But our hope is with the license application, we can take that number down maybe to 3 or 4%.
Senator Dryden?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the bill and where it falls in statute. Is this fee going to apply to medical or to marijuana?
Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, no, it will not. It's completely separate.
Okay, I have another question. This bill's been around. How many times has this bill been proposed?
Senator Beyer, Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, I do not know the exact number of times we've proposed a license application fee. I know it was proposed recently. One distinction is that this version of the bill makes the fee refundable if we do not act on the license application within 75 days.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I just was going to ask you to call Bill Perry.
All righty, we will do that. Mr. Perry? You have a question?
My question is, why do you want this bill?
Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, for the record, Bill Perry, Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association. The first question, it's been around four times. This is the fourth time. And I think the 75 days is probably the biggest factor from our vantage point. Generally, when you're out, you know, like in Senator Thompson's areas, the applications go through pretty smoothly. When you're in the more urban areas, sometimes there was a backlog there for a while where it was taking 6 months to get a license. Oh, okay. And so they've obviously done a lot to rectify that situation, and that number has come down to 75. But as, you know, from a budgetary standpoint, if there's a punitive action that happens because the delay grows longer, then we're hoping that that delay never gets back up to 6 months.
Okay.
So you're hoping that it acts like a quid pro quo?
Yes, that would be correct.
Okay. I'm curious, Jesse, did the department in its option packages ask for additional fund staffing?
Chair Beyer, we had asked for an online license application system in our as a policy option package, so
as part of the computer upgrade.
Yeah.
So you are trying to address this, and this would be a revenue source if approved that would go to support that. I see.
Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble with the math. 3,500 to 4,500 licensed applicants with expected revenue between $325,000 and $650,000. Now, 650 is double 325, but 4,500 is not double 3,500, not even close. Why the disparity? You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, Chair Beyer, Senator Monroe. Part of the variability here is not only due to the number of applicants that this will affect, but also the amount of the fee. Because the fee needs to be set in rule. The $150 fee that we've been discussing is the maximum fee allowed under statute.
It's if the application gets approved.
So those aggregate numbers, 325,000 to 650,000, includes more than just the $150 application fee?
Chair Beyer, Senator Monroe, it may perhaps be more clear to say that it includes possibly less than the $150 application fee, because the $150 is a maximum fee. For example, the annual license cost for an off-premise license is $100. So when we go into rulemaking, we need to consider whether the application fee is going to exceed the cost of the annual license.
So, Jesse, I think what he's questioning,
I think
what
any
you're
accountant
saying is
would take
adding,
a look at those numbers and question them.
The revenue numbers include not only the 150, but the additional fee that would be charged if they were approved on time.
Chair Beyer, the $150 fee is the fee that would be charged if they were approved
time.
So, actually, can I try for the record? So I think 600,000, I don't have, I was going to pull out my calculator, is if the 150 was applied to everybody and they all got approved.
Okay.
The issue is that those 4,500 licensees, some are going to get charged 150, some are going to get charged 100, and some are going to get charged 50. We just don't know until rulemaking who's going to get charged what. And so there's the low end if you charged everybody a lower amount, and there's a high end where if you charged everybody the full amount, we just don't know where
that's going
to fall.
Okay, that helps. Because my rough calculation is that 4,500 does equate to about 650,000. Very, very close.
So we just don't know who's going to get charged what until we get into
Yes.
The lower cost licenses aren't going to get charged the full 150, okay, I wouldn't assume. But.
Yeah. Okay. Now we'll spend more time.
All right,
we need
I'm
to.
Fine.
You're fine.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good enough. Thank you.
You can talk yourself out of a bit.
we'll stop that. Practice our own preaching here. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2480? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2480 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion on that motion? Is there any opposition to that motion? House Bill 2480 is moved to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. You want to carry?
Not really, but I will.
Okay. The reluctant Senator Girard will carry the bill. So we'll close on that one. That takes us to the end of the agenda. Is there anything else, James?
There's not.
Anything else?
I have a good of the order.
Good of the order.
I think the rest, everybody should be on notice that less testimony is going to make for some very short meetings the rest of the session in this policy committee.
It's just, the rule is don't say too much or you'll confuse us.
That's right.
We're adjourned. <turned. laughs>